everyone, and welcome back in to another incredible new episode of Whisper in the Wings from Stage Whisper. I am personally geeking out about today's show because it's, as a history buff, as a tour guide here in New York, this is one of those shows covering an event that's, you know, a little hidden secret, a little gem in the history of New York. And this is a fabulous production This is a fabulous production covering that piece. And joining us to talk to us about it, we've got the performers Zero Boy and Ralph Lewis, who are here to talk to us about Frigid New York and Peculiar Works Project presentation of Memoriam, Astor Place Riots, 1849. It's happening Friday, May 10th at 5:30 p.m. at Under St. Mark's. And you can get your tickets and more information by visiting frigid.nyc. Again, anybody who knows me knows either I'm in the true crime or history, and so my history buff is just runneth over. My cup runneth over. So I'm so excited to be talking about this show. Let's welcome in our guest, Zero, Ralph. Welcome to Whisper in the Wings from Stage Whisper.
Howdy.
Thanks for having us.
I am so happy you're here. I'm so happy to be talking about the show. And let me start with Ralph. Ralph, can you tell us a bit about what Memoriam, Astor Place Riots, 1849 is about?
Well, you know, I could join Zero. I'm not really so sure yet myself. You know, it's one of these things that is we're just sort of doing it because it's something that is important to both of us. And, you know, let me start with how it began. Okay, so before the pandemic, I was doing a book talk about a book that was written in the 1850s that I was just thrilled about because it talked about how much theater was exploding in New York City at the time. And so the book talk expanded into sort of a discussion about how theater began in New York City, which is how really theater began in America, because it started here in a way that it didn't start in the other colonies. So I did it live a few times, and a person who lives in the Colonnade building next door to where the riots took place asked me if I would expand that part of my discussion to focus just on the Astor Place riots. And so when the pandemic hit, I had a few opportunities to give that talk online. And I kept thinking that it needed to be more than just me telling people what happened. And so now that we're out of the pandemic, I thought this would be a great opportunity to sort of have a memorial service for the people who died because of a theater piece. I mean, I think this is something that all theater lovers should know about, because it is about the power of theater, especially in that time that people were so taken with it. And so I thought, well, how could we sort of have a memorial service in loving memory of these people who died at this event as a way of, as a metaphor for what the power of theater can be? And also the people in our own time who have dedicated their lives to the theater for whatever reasons, and maybe they've passed away now, and there's still many others dedicating their lives to it. And so in a way, this is a metaphor for today's theater people, but it's also a chance for people to learn about a very special time. I don't know, Zero, how did you learn about this event? You know a lot about it.
I was introduced to it when I first came to New York, when people said, oh, this is where they shot Grape Shot down Lafayette Street and killed all those people due to clack fighting with each other, which was not necessarily the true story. And then I did hear that podcast right after I got that Moody book that I found in a bookstore about the Astor Place riots, which is really quite an incredible tome and historical book, you know, outlining what goes down. And really, you know, I reread it again last month. It's quite the read. But basically, what you find out is it's a newspaper situation. It's the newspapers that really just want to amp it up and heat it up. You have people who want, you know, will be partisan about it, but it's not really until the papers are just, you know, yeah, and he said this, they said that. And the fact that these people at the time would go to, I mean, that MacReady is such a sensitive Sally that he just, you know, he has to, you know, have people signing affidavits. Did you see Boris hissing during my speech? You know, I mean, really? And also finding out that for MacReady was not a well-loved person by other actors who worked with him. He was quite a character based on the book. You know, I don't know. I haven't read any official books on MacReady, so I have to be careful about that, being an American, a true-born American, I might add. Not like them foreigners who can get their ass out when they get a chance. You know, and that goes for Brits.
I think one of the things, you know, if people have heard about this event, they usually just know it from these two actors, William MacReady and Edwin Forrest, and, you know, how they were in competition with each other to be the great classical actors of their time. And so that, you know, that is an interesting and important part of the event. And there have been plays written about that and books written about that. But there's also this deeper thing that Zero alludes to that was going on with a real sort of nativist sentiment in America and in New York City, that, you know, there are Americans and then there are other people from outside who are just trying to come in and take over, or maybe return America back to British rule. And so the actors kind of became symbols for this greater feeling that the citizenry had, and these newspapers and the producers at the different theaters did sort of pit the two sides against each other. And I think people know the riots is something that took place over a few days. But, you know, as we've gone and learned more about it, this rivalry began, you know, decades before it ever blew up. And so I hope an audience will love hearing about how it got to all of this place, from something that started out benign, and then it turned out to be something that took people's lives because the government stepped in and did things that the government had never done before, which is primarily shooting its own innocent civilians.
That is a wonderful synopsis and introduction to this. This is fabulous. Ralph, I want to stick with you first on this next question, which is, you know, what inspired you to do this show? What's the antithesis behind it?
You know, I think I feel like I talk to a lot of people making theater today in a sort of post-pandemic mood that, you know, maybe it's all going to collapse. The government funding is going to go away, and, oh, this is horrible and that is horrible. You know, but I've also been going to a lot of sold out shows lately. You know, it seems like that there's a lot of audiences attending now in a way that I did not see prior to the pandemic. Maybe it's supply and demand. Maybe there are fewer productions. I don't know. But I do feel like this is a special moment to sort of remind people of the power of theater and just how engaging it can be, and just how it can, you know, get audiences on their feet, you know, whether it's in a positive way to cheer on one actor over another, or whether it's to like throw rotten vegetables at them. But I do feel that there's a certain connection going on in theater today about the power of theater and how important it can be. And some people thinking that it's dead, and I don't feel that way at all. And this is a good chance for me to just do something for a day and say, hey, theater was relevant then in astronomical ways, and it can still be that relevant today.
Great. Fabulous. Zero, what about you? How is it you came upon this project?
Ralph mentioned it to me, and we met and talked about the history, which I knew a little bit about. So that was fun to like hear new things and, you know, mansplain to him exactly, you know, what I knew about it. And I'm always fascinated. I'm a mob tour guide in New York, along, you know, big history buff. A lot of my shows are based on history, so I know a lot about organized crime. I do a East Village tragedy tour where we walk about, and I talk about the Astor Place riots. You know, I mean, you're looking at, in the 1840s, the Irish now in droves. You're looking at what had been formerly a high-end neighborhood, the East Village, now becoming an immigrant neighborhood, and a kind of a clash between who tells us what to do. You know, MacReady always had more expensive tickets. forest. That's what I reread in the book, you know. So there was like, this is for the high-end people, and this is for the regular people. And these two elements are going to clash with a, you know, who's coming in to tell us what to do. We also have to remember that the country's not that old. You know, it's not that old. And so, you know, people actually are still almost alive who were in the revolution. And so it's a sore spot for some folks, and nobody wants to be told what to do by the British.
Exactly. Absolutely. I love that. I love that background as well. So let me ask the two of you, I mean, you know, we are about, what, 5 weeks away from the show as of this recording. What has it been like so far developing the piece? And Zero, I want to start with you on that.
So I'm supposed to take the nativist approach. And my attitude is that I was going to argue for why we can't allow, you know, foreigners to represent our theater. On top of that, especially foreigners who insult, cancel. Remember, this is also cancel culture. What happens to Forrest is that he comes back after MacReady complains, and he's fine that there's an actual judge that signed documents about they can't believe that he hissed during that thing. There's been the press, and your shows are canceled in America, in London. You're going to have problems. When he gets to London, he's being attacked on stage. It's only in the provinces that he does really well. In fact, they love him in England, but in London, he's being, you know, he's got people yelling at him and stuff. And so it's an element of cancel culture. You mess with our guy MacReady, we're going to make your shows hell in his hometown. And guess what happened to MacReady in New York?
Yeah, I mean, the piece really is structured like a memorial service. You know, we will have an organist playing music. We'll have a soloist to sing a bit. I don't have a dancer yet, but I haven't given up on that yet. But Zero and myself and a couple of other people will give sort of sermons about certain parts, certain elements of what took place at the time, as well as there are certain scenes that will be sort of staged. We have five other actors in addition to ourselves who will be helping us out. And yeah, so the structure is sort of like a memorial service where we can just think about and contemplate not just the people who died 175 years ago, but how they relate to the people today who give their lives to theater.
That's so fantastic. And I want to snowball off of that and ask the two of you, you know, with such a historical event and with so many themes and ideas that truly, I mean, Zero, as you brought up, with cancel culture still exists today. Is there a message or a thought you hope audiences will take away from this? And Ralph, why don't I start with you first on that?
Well, you know, I've like the two of you guys, I love the history of New York City and of Manhattan and also of all the incredible theater that has taken place since the early 1700s to where we are now. And even, you know, thinking about places like PS 122, which is now a different space, and, you know, groups like the Worcester Group and Mabu Mines and a lot of these other theater companies from the 50s, 60s, and 70s. And, you know, quite often you run into people that, you know, they don't study the history of it. And, you know, that's not something that they have to do. But I love taking the time to sort of impart how important it is to remember the shoulders that we all stand on. And, you know, I don't want to go and belabor people on, oh, you need to know about this group and you need to know what happened here. But to use something 175 years ago as kind of a metaphor for all of the history of theater, and that how the theater we're doing today is always a sum of the things that have come before it.
Well, loving that. Zero, what about you? Is there a message or thought you hope audiences take away?
Yeah, we got to keep the foreigners out. I mean, look, the hordes are coming with their theater skills to take over. You know, if we didn't have another British actor playing an American in Steven Spielberg's movies, I don't know what to tell you. What's next? You know, our president's going to be played by a British guy? Come on. No, I mean, it's funny because I went down 2 weeks ago to the Walnut Street Playhouse, and it's all about Edwin Forrest. It was the place he debuted. There's a big statue of him as Coriolanus. And I think, like Ralph says, you know, the history helps us realize that, you know, things cycle around. And the, you know, the argument about who's allowed to come in. But you remember, in less than 3 or 4 years, 500,000 people are going to roll in a decade into New York City. And that's, we don't think about that, but 500,000 people is a lot of freaking people, and they're not rich. And so the neighborhood that was rich in 1849, where Astors live, will then become the immigrant, the land of the immigrant, you know, and that really is a huge, huge change. And I think there's that element of the fear of the immigrant, and here's the high class immigrant once again telling us what kind of culture we should have, you know, because it's all Anglo, you know, we want Anglo-Americans, but we don't want Brits.
Yeah, I sort of feel like that, you know, the riots themselves are sort of a cautionary tale of acceptance and validation. And, you know, that, you know, I always thought of this country as being an accepting country. You know, we come from everywhere. We're the only country where we come from everywhere. And that is one of the glorious things. And being able to accept people that come from different places and not say, you know, this is my place, and if you don't like it, you know, get the hell out. And I just feel like we've gotten back to a place in America where acceptance, I thought we had already, you know, achieved that. We had already fought that battle, and I feel like we're fighting it again.
So basically what you're saying is the terrorists are right. Sorry.
You not endorse this in any way? No. That leads to my final question for this first part, which is, who do you hope have access to this piece? And Zero, can I start with you on that?
Well, anybody. You know, I mean, like, I think everyone should go to everything that they possibly can. And this is a history piece. So if you're like a theater person, this would be a great thing to actually, you know, it was a huge thing for me to realize, oh, they didn't fire cannons down the street. And it wasn't about two different audience members clashing. It had a lot more in-depth about, you know, foreigners, a rivalry, newspapers, you know, fueling the discontent among and players of questionable means who are using this kind of activity, rioting outside a theater, to kind of push their own agenda and their own power, because now the city has to deal with people. You know, it's a cautionary tale about newspapers.
I feel like this is a piece for any theater lover and any thespian. I mean, for anyone who wants to be a professional in this business, I feel like it should be a prerequisite that you know about this event. But, you know, maybe that's just my love of history. But when I started this as sort of a talk, it really was kind of my love letter to the theater. And so anyone who loves theater should enjoy taking a little time just to reflect upon, you know, why they love it and how they have come to love it. But, you know, this is, it's much more, it's about much more than just theater. You know, it really is about, you know, what it means to be an American and what we think of our government and what we expect from our government, how they should respond towards the citizens, towards each other. And so, yeah, it's a great thing about theater, but it's about way more than just theater.
Second part of our interview, we love giving our listeners the opportunity to get to know our guest a little bit better. Pick your brains, if you will. And I want to start with our perennial first question, which is, what or who inspires you? What playwrights, composers, or shows have inspired you in the past, or are just some of your favorites? And Ralph, if I can kick things off with you, please.
Well, you know, it's actually, you know, we're doing this piece at Under St. Mark's, which is a lovely little intimate theater. But my company, Peculiar Works Project, actually does site-based work, which just means theater, but not in theaters. And so this is sort of a unique opportunity for us to be in a theater. But I've really been inspired by other producers of work outside of theaters, like Ann Hamburger and En Garde Arts and other organizations who've, you know, the people who did Then She Fell, and, you know, anybody who, I mean, you know, we think, oh, it'd be great, I can get the space for free and just do a show. But boy, doing theater not in theaters, it's a lot of work, and it's, you know, it's a big challenge to do. And the people that do it, you know, they deserve our applause. Are there specific shows? I'm not sure. I've seen so many lately, but, you know, I just love going to the theater and I love seeing a lot of different things. Maybe Zero has some specific pieces.
Yeah, Zero, what or who inspires you?
My colleagues, mainly. I've been inspired. I've been lucky. A producer friend has been bringing me some Broadway shows. There's been some really, from Riverside to Crazy, I thought was pretty amazing. I saw Pearlies. That was incredible. I'm forgetting the name of the title. And then, you know, there's been a lot of African-American plays or African-American actors being presented on Broadway, which, you know, there's some shows I've been like, meh, but there've been, the actors are just really exploding the piano. Those really inspired me in the last 2 years, much more so than other things I've seen, just because I'm like, wow, we're really seeing the cream of some amazing actors, African-American actors. And that's been exciting to me. I always love anybody who does theater. Is it always good? I don't know. I mean, my dad was a theater reviewer in Boston. So before everything got to Broadway, I went to go see tons and tons and tons and tons and tons of shows. And when I got to New York, I didn't really necessarily do that. Only recently have I been watching Broadway stuff. Mainly, I've been in the Lower East Side, creating with my colleagues and create work, everything, you know, from the Living Theater to WOW to whatever's going on in around Brooklyn, et cetera. That's been more inspiring to me for some reason.
That's incredible. Those are both great inspirations. I appreciate you sharing that with us. Let me ask the two of you, what is your favorite part about working in the theater? And Zero, if I could please start with you on that one.
Collaboration, basically working with other people. Right now I'm working with Muffy Styler on a show called The Gangster Logs, and just having her, it was initially a solo show, and then having her come in and just working with great collaborators. I've been really blessed to have thousands of people I've been lucky to work with who aren't necessarily famous, some famous people, but in general, a lot of great artists who are just cranking it out and just doing it for the desire to do it.
Yeah, I would say for me, I love the collaboration answer. I would say also for me, community. You know, I didn't feel accepted very much when I was younger. And when I got to New York and started working in the sort of downtown community, the off Broadway community, the independent theater community, whatever you want to call it, I think that was really the first time I felt like I was accepted and I found a place where I belonged. And, you know, I just love going to things, not just the shows, but, you know, going to panels, going to talks, going to hear other people. You know, I just sat in on a rehearsal for the next show at La Mama Madea. You know, as a director, we're very rarely, you know, we're in rooms with lots of actors, but only one of us is the director quite often. And so to be in a room watching another director work was very inspiring. And I also loved being involved or a part of the sort of organizations that try to keep the community together and keep the community growing. So things like the League of Independent Theater and Indie Space and New Yorkers for Culture and Arts. You know, I really like participating when I can with those larger organizations. You know, we all have all theater makers. You could spend all your life in your own sandbox and still not do everything that needs to be done. But I sort of feel like we have a responsibility to step out of our sandbox every now and then just to give a little bit back to the rest of the community. And I think also it's a great thing. We learn so much about our own sandbox when we get out and see what other people are doing in their sandboxes and then the wider, you know, box and community, you know, altogether. So that's, yeah, community.
Those are two fantastic answers, and I absolutely love them. I think those are definitely a testament to the power of theater and truly why most of us are doing this, and we keep doing this. Well, now we've arrived at my favorite question to ask guests, and that one, of course, is, what is your favorite theater memory?
We're too old. We have so many memories. We can't, you know, focus all on just one of them. But I tell you what, I can give you one of my favorite memories, because I do like a lot of the, you know, the collectives and ensembles that have built up our community over the years, like the Worcester Group and Mabu Minds. And Mabu Minds had a show, a solo show called Hajj, that Ruth Malachek performed. And I can still close my eyes and see that actress staring into a mirror, talking about the journey that she was on. And I just thought Ruth Malachek is such a fabulous actress, and Mabu Minds such an important part of our community. And that show really is one where I can just close my eyes and see it all again.
That is a fabulous memory. I love that. Thank you for that. Zero, how about you?
So many memories, I guess. I'll just say a funny memory. I'm doing a show in Berlin at the Chameleon Varieté. I get there and realize we have a gala. Oh, gala. Yeah, we're starting early. You didn't get the note. Oh, no. So I'd invited some friends to come down. And I run down and say, listen, it's a gala show. Run back. Let me see if I can get you in. I go back up. I'm starting to get my makeup on when I hear in comes Hacky. Okay, everyone. Someone has died in the foyer. Now, typically, when someone dies in the theater, you take the body out, the show goes on. But this is a gala for a bank, and it was the man who has the key to the safe. So everyone knows him. And so they said, listen, we're all going to, you can just hang out, eat the food, because they had a big spread. So I ran down to tell my friends as they came out with the plastic green bag to the police coroners, Berlin coroners. So that's kind of always a memory that's hit me, you know, for a weird memory. I mean, there's others, but that's the one that comes to the top of me. Someone has died in the foyer.
Another life that theater has taken from us.
Yeah, I like macabre things sometimes.
That is one of the most unique memories we've ever had, but I absolutely love it. Thank you both so much for those memories. Those are amazing. Well, as we wrap things up, I would love to know, do either of you have any other projects or productions coming on the pipeline that we might be able to plug for you?
You know, I am in development mode on several different things right now. I'm collaborating with the director in California on a climate change project. I'm collaborating with an actor playwright in Florida, trying to bring one of his shows up to New York this summer. And I have a couple of films that I'm currently editing. So I have no production dates. So Zero, I leave that up to you. Do you have any shows coming up?
My show Triggered, The Gangsta Logs with Johnny Z of Moida Inc. is going to be a 3-night run at Under St. Mark's, the 31st. And the 1st, it's at 10 p.m. And on the 2nd, it's at 7. And that's a history of a hitman for Murder, Inc. And it has an interactive part. Who do you want whacked? How do you want it done? And what are you willing to pay? So, collaboration with Muffy Styler.
Very cool things going on. This is great. So we're going to have to keep tabs on both of you, which is a great lead into my final question, which is, if our listeners would like more information about Memoriam, Astor Place Riots 1849, or about either of you, perhaps they'd like to reach out to you, how can they do so?
Well, for me, it's pretty easy. Peculiarworks.org. is where you can find out what we're up to. And that's also a place where you can join our mailing list. If you like traveling to adventurous places to see adventurous theater, that's all you need to do.
Zero Boy NYC at Instagram. I have zeroboy.com. I don't necessarily put up what's going on at that website, but you can see what I've done, give you some links, etc. Yeah.
Wonderful. Well, Zero, Ralph, thank you both so, so much for stopping by and sharing this incredible production, the history behind it, some amazing insight. This has been delightful. So thank you both so much for your time today.
It's going to be a blast.
Thank you, Andrew.
My guests today have been the performers Zero Boy and Ralph Lewis, whose upcoming production being presented by Frigid New York and Peculiar Works Project is Memoriam, Astor Place Riots 1849. It's happening Friday, May 10th at 5:30 p.m. at Under St. Mark's, and you can get your tickets and more information by visiting frigid.nyc. We also have some contact information for our guests, which we'll be posting on our episode description, as well as on our social media posts. But make sure you come out for this fantastic, this historical piece, Memoriam, Astor Place Riots, 1849, Friday, May 10th at 5:30 p.m. So until next time, I'm Andrew Cortez, reminding you to turn off your cell phones, unwrap your candies,
and keep talking about the theater
in a stage whisper.
Thank you.
If you like what you hear, please leave a 5-star review, like, and subscribe.
You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram at Stage Whisper Pod.
And feel free to reach out to us with your comments and personal stories at stagewhisperpod@gmail.com.
And be sure to check out our website for all things Stage Whisper and theater. You'll be able to find merchandise, tours, tickets, and more. Simply visit stagewhisperpod.com. Our theme song is Maniac by Jazzar. Other music on this episode provided by Jazzar and Billy Murray. You can also become a patron of our show by logging on to patreon.com/stagewhisperpod. There you will find all the information about our backstage pass as well as our tip jar. Thank you so much for your generosity. We could not do this show without you.